It's the Marketplace Tech Podcast for Thursday, the 18th. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. The Sony Pictures hack has now prompted the company to officially cancel its Christmas Day release of the movie The Interview in theaters. This comes after threats of real violence against moviegoers from the hacking group calling itself Guardians of Peace. The comedy about American journalists trying to assassinate North Korea's Kim Jong-un started to have premiere events drop this week, and then several large theater chains said they would not carry it. It's a big development in the ongoing woes of Sony, where computer system issues have continued for days in its offices around the world. ESET researcher Stephen Cobb says Sony's move is unprecedented.
I don't think anything of this scale has happened before, where the activities of the online world, the digital world, have rolled over into physical consequences. A couple of things to note here. One is that the motivation seems to be political or agenda-driven, and those hacks are in a way more likely to spill over into the real world because they're part of somebody's wider agenda.
What message does this send to other hackers?
It probably emboldens them. You know, if these particular people had just made a YouTube video about how they were going to attack theaters during the Christmas period, it would be quite different. They would not be receiving the attention they are, and the threat would not perhaps be getting the credibility, although you clearly have to defer to law enforcement in terms of whether indeed there is any credible actual threat around this.
When does hacking cross over and become terrorism?
I don't think there is a crossover line. A lot of people talk about the bright line between cyber activity and kinetic threats, which is the military term. You know, the American government has said, you know, if you hack us badly, we will retaliate with physical force or kinetic response. But we really need to be taking cyber security and hacktivism much more seriously than we do. I mean, there are a lot of innocent Sony employees whose lives have been turned upside down by what's been revealed so far. And you don't have to go kinetic to do a lot of damage.
Stephen Cobb is senior security researcher at ESET North America. Stephen, thank you very much.
You're welcome, Ben.
By the way, ABC News is quoting unnamed federal cybersecurity investigators who say that it looks like a North Korean cyber unit called Bureau 121 could have been responsible. Russia's currency has lost about half of its value in dollars compared to a year ago. This week, the ruble has been extra volatile. And because of that, Apple has now stopped online sales of its products there. The company had been trying to keep things on the shelves, increasing the price of the iPhone 6 by 25% last month to try and deal with the country's currency volatility. But Andrew Bartels of Forrester says there are two reasons behind Apple's policy change.
One, if you go back and look at some of the news stories back in November, there were reports coming out of Russia that they were going to ban sales of iPads and iPhones because of the fact that Apple did not have a native Russian data center. But I think the other factor, of course, is the ruble and the sudden drop in the ruble and the realization that they're being exposed to currency risk in a very major way.
Is it really that hard, though, to get an iPad if you're in Russia right now?
I'm not in Russia, so I don't know the answer, but I suspect there are various ways that you can get them. Certainly, it's going to be a secondary market. But on the other hand, it is going to be more challenging, certainly, to get an iPhone, get an iPad.
Do you think some Russian-based tech companies might actually benefit from this?
I think the currency is not a factor. What is a factor is whether, in fact, are Russian companies capable of delivering these kinds of products en masse? And I think the short answer is no. But it's hard to do that in any kind of a short-term basis, given the fairly rudimentary state of a lot of the Russian technology market.
Andrew Bartels is an analyst at Forrester Research. Andrew, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Marketplace has been on the air for 25 years, and that couldn't have happened without the support from listeners like you. So please make a tax-deductible gift to Marketplace today and help us keep our coverage relevant and compelling. And you should know that your gift in any amount counts twice, thanks to a dollar-for-dollar match from the Candida Fund. Donate at Marketplace.org by December 31st and help us reach our goal of at least 2,500 donors. Thanks for your support. Sometimes a really simple piece of technology can be a game changer in a business negotiation. And even though they can't control a lot about their work environment, cherry and apple pickers in Washington State are shaking up the labor market there and changing salary negotiations with the use of cell phones. From Washington's Yakima Valley, Rowan Moore Garrity brings this report.
Eduardo Cruz says there's a big range in what you get paid to pick apples.
This year, I picked Honeycrisp for $42 a bin. At other farms, they paid $35 a bin, or $30.
Farm workers have always gotten together to trade tips. Still, they often had to drive out to far-flung orchards to find out who was hiring and what they were paying. Nowadays, most of these conversations take place via cell phone.
I've got a lot of friends, and we talk.
You ask a few questions about the job, get the foreman's number, and if it seems promising, make the trip out to the orchard. Cell phones have reduced the transaction costs of looking for farm work. And that's made the workforce more willing to move around, says grower Charlie De La Chapelle.
And that's a good thing, because if, in fact, we are short of people and we have a good price, they call their buddies and they bring them.
Here's the flip side.
You don't know who's going to show up tomorrow.
On Chappelle's farm, workers picking Fujis have to sort the fruit as they go, which can hurt their pay. Orchard manager Art Thompson is worried his crew might start looking elsewhere.
We got a pretty steady crew, but believe me, if I let them keep making this wage all day, the cell phones will start being picked up.
So employers have to be ready to adjust wages. It's basic economics. Free-flowing information leads to a freer market. Researchers have made similar observations about cell phones across the developing world. Agricultural economist Philip Martin recalls one study of fishermen in southern India.
If you're out in your little boat and you've got a bunch of fish, you have more power to know which port to take them to by calling the various fish brokers and saying, what are you paying?
And for low-wage workers without much clout, cell phones have brought a bit of leverage. In Yakima, I'm Rowan Moore Garrity for Marketplace.
Okay, we're done for now. I'm Ben Johnson, and that's Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.